are live, folks, with episode 3469. Our guest Matthew will be on with us in just a moment. We are starting a bit late, but I will take responsibility for that because I originally sent the link to the wrong Matthew. So we got that corrected. We're starting just a few minutes late today, and we're going to have a great discussion. We're going to talk about concealed carry considerations in the year 2024. Like me, Matthew has carried for a long time. He's also the owner of Ares Tactical and makes concealed carry holsters and things like that. And it is interesting in his application. I thought this would be a good discussion, not just concealed carry, what we do to conceal carry properly, et cetera, but the changes. Like when I moved to Texas back in the 1990s, you couldn't even legally conceal carry in Texas. Then we got concealed carry with a permit. Then we got concealed carry no matter what. We got open carry. Then we got open or concealed with no permit, constitutional. And so that's a lot of change in a couple decades. You go from not at all to open or concealed with no permit. And so there's a lot to discuss, a lot to unpack. And as usual, when we talk about this, I'll just throw this out, and I'm sure Matthew will reiterate it when I bring him on in just a moment. You don't live where I live. Laws are highly variable about this, but things are getting more and more similar across the gradient. So we'll talk about that and some other considerations with concealed carry, like what you carry, how you carry it, where you don't, all of that. Before we do, let's go ahead and hear from our sponsors of the day. Sponsor of the day number one today is KnifeKits.com. Knife Kits, guys, they've been around a while. How long? I started taking sponsors in 2009. That's when I took my first sponsors, about 7-8 months into the journey. They're still here. You imagine a podcast with a sponsor who's been with them since 2009. I have several, but Knife Kits is one of them. They have really cool stuff. We had a pretty strict vetting process bringing the first sponsors in. As back in the forum days, I just basically turned my moderators loose on them like a pile of jackals and said, find me something wrong. They couldn't find anything. All the Blade forums and all love these guys, you know, all that time ago. You know, we're a decade and a half, guys, and we're still working with them. So if you've ever wanted to know, can I make a knife for myself? The answer is yes, they make it easy. If you're like progressing and becoming a master bladesmith or something, and you want just raw materials, they've got that too. Check out the cool mosaic pins if you're on the video. I dig that tree one right there. I might have Patrick do something up for me with that over at MT Knives. Just as a thought, just looking at that. Anyway, guys, check them out. They also have all the stuff you need for making like leather holsters, leather sheets, kydex, all of that stuff. Check them out today. Again, KnifeKits.com. Next up today is Above Phone. Above Phone is how you cut the tether between you and big tech when it comes to your mobile needs. It is not just that AT&T or, you know, whoever you have as a carrier is spying on you. So is the manufacturer of your phone, and so is the app manufacturers on your phone. You can make that all go away with Above Phone. You can have a sensor-free, permissionless, private app store. And if you do need to use something out of Google Play or something like that, the standard apps, you can go ahead and use those anyway, only for what you need. And you can even, like, I love this, you can put them in their own little app prison where they only do the things that they do when you let them do it because you've decided you need to use them. It's really simple. The phones are great, and you can get $75 off any of the phones at Above Phone if you are an MSB member. So definitely consider checking that out. And with that, I want to bring our special guest Matthew onto the show. Matthew, I hadn't said your last name yet because I wasn't sure if it was Fakus or Focus, and I didn't want to pronounce it wrong.
It's Fakus.
Fakus. See, it wouldn't have mattered. 50-50, and I still blew it.
Hey, you got the company name right. That's all that really matters.
Yeah, Ares Tactical, and we'll talk about that today some too. Let's lead off with, like, let's not even worry about concealed carry or running a tactical company. Like, Matthew's years ago, you're trying to figure out what to do with your life. How do you even end up, like, this is your path? You're going to be building equipment for people like you do.
Right. Well, you know, coming out of high school, I knew college wasn't for me. I went into Marine Corps, you know, got to go to the first Gulf War and hang out there and get a good suntan for a while. Came back in after that, you know, after the wind down from the first Gulf War, there wasn't a lot of money being spent in the military. So
no, man, I remember them paying dudes to get out.
Yeah.
It's one of the reasons I didn't stay in. I was like, if they value these guys that little, then I don't want to be them one day.
Well, I mean, in the Marine Corps, when you're on base in the rear, they play games all the time to keep you busy. At least when you're overseas, you get to do more stuff. And you know, my time started to come up towards the end there. They said it'll be at least 18 months before you can get sent anywhere. So I was like, I think I'm checking out now. went to college, was doing retail sales in the outdoor gear market for a while there. I come up to 99. This is where our paths crossed slightly. I was in the telecom industry doing wireless internet.
Okay.
So while you were trying to trench fiber, I was trying to convince people they could do microwave building to building better than and cheaper than what you could do.
Okay.
So that ran its course for a few years. Started to get more into shooting, you know, that late 90s, concealed carry in Virginia started to open up to be more of a shell issue state, which I guess we'll talk about a little bit later, you know, differences. Okay. So that's when I first got my concealed carry permit. So I've been carrying since then. Along the way, I got asked to do overseas contracting, you know, from my background, some of the people I knew, I had done personal protection specialist, which is basically bodyguard work. So I spent a couple of years over in Afghanistan working on stuff. And when I came back, I was doing some domestic, you know, personal protection work. And that is really where the knife or where the holster company came around is I needed a holster. I went to one of the holster makers. They said, it's going to be 16 weeks and $150. And I'm like, you give me $150 in 16 weeks for a holster. I bet you I could figure this out.
Yeah.
So I made my first holster for myself and I carried it on my detail and everybody else on the detail was like, that's great. You know, I came at it with a little bit different perspectives than what some other people were doing. So I made them all stuff and the wife had another kid and she goes, I'm tired of you disappearing for weeks or months on end. I don't want to be a single mom. You need to stay here more often. And it just kind of snowballed from there. I started going to gun shows saying, hey, look what I can do.
Yeah.
And put a website up, ran the website. And here we are 11 years later, still making holsters, still my full-time business.
I laughed there when you said, look what I can do, because I have this weird memory that remembers all kinds of weird shit. And it made me think of the skits that used to be on Mad TV with Stewart. Look what I can do. but no, it's like the way to really market is to tell your story. And there is a lot of power in the visual components of the story and being able to tell somebody here, try, you know, go ahead and try this holster. Here's a blue gun. See what drawing from it, what the comfort's like. It's huge because I struggle still with finding like really the most comfortable way to carry, especially like June through September when the sun tries to kill us here in Texas. Like in winter, like I have this really cool vest that my buddy turned me on to. And, you know, you don't look weird with a vest on in Texas in December, but you might as well just put concealed carry in giant letters, like DEA letters on your back if you were doing that in the summer here. So
yeah.
I think that's a great way. Yeah, I think it's a great way to make the point. You know, like this is a really great holster because it fits well, it's comfortable, it draws well. Like those are the things that I think most people that carry are most concerned about is like, I don't want to print heavily. I don't want it digging into my gut. You know, when I sit down, I don't want to look like I'm adjusting my my male parts or whatever a lot. I just want to be comfortable. But when I need it, man, I don't want to be sitting there, you know, getting shot while I'm trying to draw my weapon.
Yep.
So let's talk about, like, right out of the gate, this might sound like a weird question, but I think people do need to hear an answer to this. What does it mean when you say concealed carry? Because things are a lot different now. Like I said, right now, I could throw on my big leather hunting shoulder holster, my giant Canon 357 hunting revolver, stick that in there and I can go out and it may make people uncomfortable, but legally I am fine. But I don't take that approach. You know, I don't see any, like, for all the fight to get it done, and I'm glad they did here in Texas, I hardly ever see anybody open carry. And so, you know, can we talk just a little bit about concealed carry and not just what it is but why?
Well, concealed carry most simply is having a hidden firearm with you as you move about the day. You know, the reason why we're talking about what you've talked about before was an open carry, and you mentioned it a little bit earlier, which is having a firearm on your hip or in a, you know, chest holster or something like that, where the whole world can see. Mm-hmm. Concealed carry gives you an element of surprise if a bad guy decides to act that he doesn't know that you have a firearm. So keeping it concealed, one, gives you an element of surprise against an aggressor. Secondly, it doesn't freak out a lot of people. You know, you standing in line to get your order at, you know, Wendy's or whatever like that, and you have your 357 on your hip, people are going to look at you weird, whether it's legal or not. They're just like, they're not used to it. And because they're not used to it, it's not really socially acceptable, even though it's legally acceptable.
Correct. Yeah, I think, like, the one time I'll see it here is, like, sometimes I'll see a guy with, like, a gun on him. It's at, like, the feed store or something. Like, and that's like, usually some farmer that had to run out, and he carries while he's working because coyotes, whatever, and, you know, he's going to, and I think it's good that we have it because of that, but I see it as a tactical disadvantage. So, I mean, you think about, and I've said this a lot of times, I do carry to protect myself, but I carry as much for that as to protect others. And reality is, if I'm walking out to my car and somebody decides to come up and stab me with a screwdriver, it's very likely they're going to do that before I get a chance to defend myself. A third party, though, I'm in an observational position. I'm in a really great position to intervene on a third party's behalf. But if you are talking about some of these mass shootings and all, if I'm a bad dude and I walk into a restaurant, for instance, and I see a guy with a gun, guess who I'm shooting first? Right? Am I not going to immediately like scan the area? Okay, this dude have a gun. They're my first two targets. But if I'm concealed, then I'm just another person. That's like, I have a lot of reasons, but that's one of them.
The proponents for open carry, their main argument is, if I have a gun with me and it's seen, that a bad guy won't do anything. Mm. Unfortunately, bad guys don't think like that. Mm-mm. Bad guys think like, oh, look, he's carrying a $600 gun on his hip. You know, just like you wear a, you know, $4,000 Omega watch. They're like, I know I can get money for that watch. I can get money for that gun.
Or maybe they want a gun and they can't buy one, right? So, like, I've been wanting a gun. Look.
Yeah. I mean, you know? You see these situations where, you know, the shooting where the security guard gets shot first because he's got the gun.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you're that open carry person and you're visible, you'll be the person they go first.
That's exactly what happened at that gay nightclub in Florida years ago. Right. There was a dude, there was an off-duty officer on duty as a security guard with a gun, first person that was taken out. I mean, the guy that did it had been there and knew that setup, right? So it would have been much better if that off-duty officer was armed and in the shadows than standing at the door with the gun on.
Yeah.
The good news, I think, in Texas, and this was a huge part of why the movement got so strong, depending on what jurisdiction you were in, concealed meant concealed all the time, all the way. And anything that could be taken as brandishing could be prosecuted as a felony. And there were instances where people were uncomfortable. A guy goes into a store, you know, and buys something and asks for change in a 5 and 1s instead of a 10. And as he leans over, the guy sees his gun and he like calls the police and said he was being, you know, jacked. And like the law was so tight, it was like if you printed, you brandished. So the good news with that is it took that away. Like, and I think that's
prosecutorial discretion. So you can be in a state that allows concealed carry. But like you said, if the prosecutor in that area doesn't like it and somebody complains, they're going to throw it. I mean, take a look at Rittenhouse, who clearly on video was the self-defense case, and they still tried to run him through the ringer.
Dude, thank God that guy got a decent judge. I don't feel like the judge stacked the deck in either direction, but I think he made sure that was a fair trial. And, you know, and I think he really probably wanted the outcome that came, but I think he did his job. But like, you are really throwing a dart at a random board with a blindfold on when you trust prosecutors on discretion and judges on discretion as well. Let's talk about the legalities of it and how maybe that's changed over the years. Like, I still think there's people that think, oh, if you have a gun that and you're carrying it in public, that's illegal. And I think that is really subject to where you are, when you're there, et cetera. But like, I think concealed carry is in one way or another legal in every state in the country now.
Right. There is concealed carry in almost all 50 states. Right now, what you're looking at is there's 29 states which have called constitutional carry or called permitless carry, which means if you meet the requirements, you don't have to ask permission to carry a firearm. Mm-hmm. Some of that's open, some of that's concealed. You have about 48 states after the New York State rifle and pistol, you know, went to Supreme Court and got in their favor. So there's 48 states which are called shall issue states. They have a set of requirements. You fill out your paperwork, you pay your money. If you meet those requirements, they have to give you the permit to carry a concealed firearm. So even now, when you take a look at like California, which is massively anti-gun, they have over 100,000 permits issued. New York State, another very anti-gun state, they have over 250,000 permits that have already been issued. And then you have two outliers, which are Delaware and Connecticut. Those are called may issue states. Mm-hmm. So you fill out the paperwork, you submit it, and then a police chief or a judge makes a final decision whether you're worthy to have a concealed carry permit.
And I think we need to reiterate on that. There are states that are shall issue that still have that, and it's basically the chief or the sheriff has to sign off unless there's a reason not to. But there are like that's how Pennsylvania is still. You know, you have to get your chief law enforcement officer for your area to sign off on it, but they have to do it unless they can show cause, like, oh, you're a felon, right? That would be cause. Other than that, pretty much. And I think there is, like, a lot of those states, like, there is some case-by-case stuff. Like, if you're a guy that's been, you know, had domestic disputes called on you multiple times in the past, even if you weren't convicted at a felony level, they might be able to get it. But it has to be something very much concrete. Otherwise, they've got to issue the permit.
You're basically, if you're a felon, you're not allowed to have a pistol or, you know, firearm anyway. So that's an automatic disclosure. Like you said, if you have domestic abuse or you have a violent offense on your record, even if it's not a felony, that can be enough to prevent you from getting, you know, a concealed carry permit. But, you know, having a speeding ticket doesn't disqualify you. You can't find these BS charges or, you know, you didn't file your income taxes last year. They're not going to, you know, forward that paperwork. Yeah. But they can definitely, you know, in some of these states, drag their feet on the approval process and make it, you know, instead of a week or a month, you know, many months, or they can try to charge ridiculous fees, which I've seen a lot of people have fought back against, you know, the $250 application fee. You know, like, well, that kind of makes it unrealistic for a lot of people to pay that kind of money. So that has been pulled back in some states on these ridiculous fees.
What would you tell a person in a state like Texas or the other 28 states that have done it now that have constitutional carry that says, well, I don't see any reason to get a concealed carry license now because I can carry without one? Are there some advantages still to doing it, especially in a state like Texas where, like, you literally almost have to be a felon or, like, the cops have to be at your house every other day to not immediately just get signed off on and go ahead and get your shit?
Well, the number one thing is that concealed carry permit people are often afforded more areas in which they can carry concealed, such as, like, if you go to school, schools are almost 100% off limits for concealed carry going into the school. But you could be in the car pickup line at school if you're a concealed carry permit holder versus a constitutional carry in that state might not allow it. So you're allowed to go more areas. And again, this is state by state and goes all over the place. Like, going to a restaurant that serves alcohol, if you have a permit, you may be allowed to eat there with a concealed carry permit. And depending on the state, you might actually be allowed to actually have a drink while, you know, with permitted in concealed carry.
Yeah.
Versus if you don't, you're not allowed to do that.
Yep.
Another thing is, from a legal standpoint, if you are in a confrontation, you have at least this piece of paper where you can say, look, I followed your rules to carry this pistol. I went to your training that you said I should have for this. It gives you a little bit more protection against, you know, prosecution.
Hmm. Yeah. The other thing is, like, here in Texas, like, let's say you go to a storefront and they have a picture with a gun with the Ghostbuster thing going through it and you're licensed. That means absolutely positively nothing. It's an irrelevant thing that in our law, it has to be posted a specific statute, and it's just ironic that the statute's 30.06. And so that the 30.06 statute covers, even if you're a licensed concealed carry holder, you cannot carry on this private premises. The owner said no, which a lot of people get in a wad about. I might not give that person business, but I totally respect their right to make that decision. The geniuses in our legislature figured if 30.06 was for concealed, 30.07 was for open. And so if you want to now deny the rights of both of those, you have to actually post both of those signs in a window. So it's important that you know that, and you know that no guns by a private holder of a piece of property, just no guns, if you do not have a permit, applies to you. Right. So it's totally legal for me to carry, but, you know, the person that hasn't specifically signed, because that gives that property owner some flexibility in that, you know what, if you are licensed and you've had a background check, I trust you to carry in my establishment. So, I think everybody that wants to carry should be able to carry as long as you're not causing any problems. But I get property rights. And I think that's one. And I guess the other one would be state reciprocity, because there are states that they even have open carry. But you're not from here, so not for you. But if you have a permit from a reciprocity state, then you can carry. And I think it just makes your life easier. And I don't know what it costs in other states, but in Texas, it's like $45 for 5 years or 6 years or something like that.
Right.
Yeah, it's enough that I don't remember.
Right. So when you're in the East Coast area and you go through multiple states really easily versus Texas, yeah, where you drive all day and you're still in the same state.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does. It's beneficial to have that carry permit that's been issued by the state, because open state, like I said, you know, a constitutional state may or may not allow somebody who's not a resident of the state, a full-time resident of the mm-hmm. state, to carry. So I go to, you know, certain states, I cross the border, they have, you know, a constitutional carry state, but they're like, you're not from here, you're not allowed to do that.
Correct.
So having that permit, they usually have reciprocity. You can go to places like concealcarry.com or USCCA, you know, there's tons of maps out there where you just click on your state and you can see what your laws are in your state, which states honor your permit.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know how it is everywhere. In Texas, if I go to buy a gun and I'm like, I want to buy that gun, usually you have to fill out 4440, and it's no big deal, but it's one more thing to do. In Texas, if you just hand them your concealed carry permit, you don't have to fill out the form. They just sell you the gun. I don't know exactly how that works or whatever, but it's like a FFL light or something, just to have a concealed carry permit.
That's certainly a lot more convenient.
Yeah. Yeah. So just the convenience alone is probably worth that. What do you feel about as far as training for concealed carry? Is it necessary or is it just a good idea?
This is interesting. From a fundamental constitutional point, I believe it should not be required. From a practical standpoint, I think it's foolish not to get training. And I look to get training in four areas. You know, one, take a class that is a concealed carry focus class that teaches you how to draw from concealed carry, you know, some of the considerations and be able to hit your target, you know, reliably. Also, take a look at training is, you should take a martial arts training. You should take some type of empty hand fighting skill, you know, get punched in the face, yeah, get pushed around, somebody who's not compliant, you know, is going to give you a little bit of pushback. I won't tell you which ones to do because there's going to be somebody who's going to jump in and complain that I didn't mention their favorite one, or the one that I mentioned was complete junk. But there's a lot of good fighting styles that are out there. And that just gives you an extra level or an extra tool in your toolbox that you might not need to pull your firearm out if you're confident in your ability to defend yourself or defend your, you know, people around you. The other type of training that I really recommend for people is get some type of medical training. You need to have some type of traumatic care training. You know, there's classes called Stop the Bleed, or in the military, they have TCCC that teach you how to deal with severe trauma type injuries. And if you're out, you're more likely to use that to stop a severe bleed, maybe in a car accident, maybe in a shooting, than you are to ever pull your firearm out in, you know, self-defense. And the fourth, you know, training, I'll call it, is get into some type of shooting competition. You know, there's IDPA, USPSA. You know, the advantage of that is, one, you're getting trigger time. Two, you're getting put into multiple scenarios that you don't normally think about. I mean, it's one thing to go to Uncle Buck's farm, throw out some cans and shoot them from the hip, right? But it's a whole nother thing to, in a competition, to sit down in a chair at a table and then have to start to engage targets, because people don't do that. You know, if you go out and shoot with your buddies, that's not usually something you do. But in competition, they'll put you in these kind of environments where you're just like, oh, what am I supposed to do? And, you know, it's one of those things. Once you've kind of gone through it, your brain started to work these problems out. If it comes off, you know, comes again to you later on in real life, you're like, I've done this before. I understand. It helps you also to shake out your equipment, you know, to really define what works for you. So if you're shooting IDPA, that requires you to wear some type of cover garment, whether it's a shirt over your pistol or a vest or something like that. Mm-hmm. And you start to shoot one or two competitions, you start to realize, you know what? I thought this works, but it doesn't work for me. Yeah. And then you start messing with your gear. Okay, I need a different holster, or I need to put it in a little bit different way. Maybe I need to change the angle of what I'm already carrying to make it more comfortable. I mean, you see people, you know, in competition, it's kind of funny when it doesn't happen to you, but they'll sit down in these chairs and almost always they'll have the plastic lawn chairs that people will sit in. And they'll go to stand up to shoot, and their pistol will get caught in the chair, and they'll, you know, the whole chair will come up with them. And you're like, that slows you down in competition, but it's far better to make the mistakes in competition.
Yeah, or make and a new appendix carrier was a new appendix carrier was just born. Right? It often happens with those types of scenarios. There's a couple things in that though, like the martial arts thing. I completely agree with. I don't know if it was this week or last week. I just talked about this though. One of the things people need to get in their mind, I think it was yesterday's show, honestly, is that if I'm armed, right, and I'm out and about and I end up in a conflict, that I don't feel the need to escalate to an armed conflict, but there's some sort of physical confrontation, then I am in a conflict where a gun is involved, whether the other party has one or not. The fact that I have it means that there is potential for it to play a role. Like we're rolling around and a guy gets his hand on my, that's why I'm not rolling around with a guy when I got a gun on, right? So I could be, as long as he doesn't jump me from behind or something, because his hand goes to that. And if he kills me or even wounds me, he's going to tell the cops. So I had to kill him. He tried to shoot me. He had a gun. It's his gun, not mine. Yeah. That automatically makes you look like the aggressor. So you need to be able to handle yourself so you don't end up drug into that sort of physical conflict. I also think the point about competition, for some people, that may be the only way they can gain that experience. If you live somewhere where you can shoot in your backyard, or like when I grew up in Pennsylvania, every other stripping hole you could go shoot, a guy opened a gun range there and everybody laughed, like you're going to go broke because there's plenty of places to shoot. But like around here, unless you know somebody, there's not a lot of like public land you can just go shoot on. Or unless you have land, you have to go to a range. Well, most ranges, they will not let you draw and shoot, right? Let alone sit down in a chair, stand up and draw and shoot, unless it's a sanctioned competition.
Yep.
So for a lot of people, if they're going to get that experience at all, you're either doing it with airsoft, which I think is great training for muscle memory, but it is not the same, or you don't get it at all unless you do like what you're saying.
Yep. One of the other things I want to talk about is with concealed carry shooting classes and martial arts, you have a different set of confidence about yourself. And when you have confidence, you carry yourself differently. You look less like prey. You know, bad guys are looking for easy targets. They're not looking for the biggest, baddest guy to take down. They want get what they get and get out of there as fast as possible. So when you take these things, you become more confident in your own ability. And it's invisible, but people notice that sort of thing, especially criminals.
Yeah, yeah. And the other thing I would say is, safety, just basic gun safety, which I think most states do have a requirement to get a license of taking a basic safety course, which would be great. I didn't get how important this was until I was a kid in the Army in basic training, and they gave everybody a friggin' M16, right? And this is old school Vietnam era, fully auto M16s back in those days, man. And I mean, to defend the Army and the drill sergeants, when they issue, you know this from being in the Corps, they issue rifles. You pretty much live with that rifle for all of basic, but you're not getting your hands on ammo. Like there's an ammo shakedown at the end of every range day and all. And for the first couple of weeks, you don't see ammo, right? It's all dry fire and stuff like that. But when I would look around and see some of my fellow recruits and the way they were handling a rifle, it freaked me out. And I had grown up in a hunting family, surrounded by hunting families, surrounded by hunting family. I grew up in a place where they closed school for the first day of deer season. My English teacher that was a 5'2" little woman could tell you how to properly handle a gun. And all of a sudden I'm around people and going, holy shit. Like, some people don't have any idea how to have the most basic concept of like muzzle discipline and trigger discipline.
It's one of those things. If you don't know, you don't know what you don't know.
You don't know what you don't know. Yeah. Yeah. That's what I'm getting at. And that's as much as I'm for rights and freedom, man. When I think back to that, I'm like, I really hope that every single person that puts a gun on their body has had some training, whether it's by, you know, grandparents or a professional, but some training in safety, because they don't know what they don't know. And then you see these people that, like, I've been carrying my whole life, and this is one of the drills I do. And they put a video up on Twitter, and the guy blows a hole in the side of his leg doing some kind of fast draw bullshit or something. Yeah. It's like, dude, that should never happen.
There's,
right?
there's
that should
tons
never
of videos
happen.
On Instagram of people shooting themselves.
There's a lot of them. Do you see the DEA agent shoot himself in the classroom?
Yeah. Yeah, I saw
right,
that
with
one.
His Glock, right? His Glock 19 or his Glock 20 or whatever the hell it was.
And
man,
was just
like, oh,
minutes after he said, I'm a professional.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Know? Yeah, yeah.
I've been trained in Kapow.
I will give that dude one thing. He took shooting himself better than I've ever seen anybody do it. He was like, see, that was a mistake.
Yeah. There's another one guy at a range teaching a small class, and he's got his, you know, 44 Magnum revolver, whatever, and he shoots the ceiling, and he just rolled with it like nothing happened. And one of the students mentions, you know, like, is that supposed to happen?
Well, see, because I had good muzzle discipline, nothing bad happened.
Yeah,
that's the bullshit cover. What are you, is there any, before we move from training, is there any additional training that you would maybe recommend beyond what we talked about already?
No, I think that really covered, you know, those four different areas. You know, a real firearms class is dedicated to conceal carry, or like a fighting pistol class, one that gets you, you know, good trigger time, helps you work with your draw, helps you make sure that your sights are aligned and you're squeezing trigger so you're hitting what you need to shoot at. The medical, you know, bad things happen, whether guns involved or not. You know, people accidentally stab themselves or they cut themselves with a chainsaw. You need to be able to handle traumatic injuries.
Yeah.
And then the martial arts, again, it's just another tool and, you know, level of confidence. If somebody kind of gets up in your face, you don't have to pull your gun out right away. If you have some type of training, you understand. I understand physical distance and creating distance from people. And then again, you know, put that to use in a class or in a firearm shooting competition that lets you get more trigger time in and expose you to different scenarios that you might not have thought about before.
That actually just made me think of like a niche for somebody out there to maybe develop. So as you were talking about the martial arts thing, I was thinking, well, what martial art would I recommend? And I agree with you, learn how to handle yourself. And in my mind first went like with all the blocks and the green zone, red zone, and every, or the locks and the green zone, red zone concept in all jiu-jitsu. But the first thing you're doing in jiu-jitsu is rolling around on the ground. It would be really interesting for someone to develop a limited martial arts training specifically for the concealed carry person. Because my situation, if I'm armed, my goals, if I'm in a physical confrontation, are entirely different with that gun on me than without that gun on me. And I know that people would say that's not the case, but it is the case. And I've always been like, you need to know how to grapple, but that does not mean to be where you go at first. And we used to do training with this, and like somebody would say how badass they were as a grappler, and we'd put them with somebody that was good enough to engage them, and they would engage them, and they'd be down on the ground ready to put that submit lock on, and you just walk up behind him and take your foot and just stomp 2 inches away from their forehead.
Yep.
And just boom, and that boot comes down, and they're like, oh, I see.
There's really only one person that I'm aware of, but I only know a little bit of the world, right? And that's Craig Douglas at ShivWorks. He does training like that close, extreme close quarters, when you have a knife, when you have a firearm. I mean, he has classes where you're in a car and, you know, somebody carjacks you, or somebody, you know, sitting in your car and gets violent, you know, working in these confined spaces. I'm sure there's other people, but he's the first person I've seen do it. And he's really the only person that I've seen that actually has classes focused on that sort of environment.
Yeah. I do think there's maybe a, for a lot of trainers, even within any discipline, like a niche there, like a short, like 6 weeks intensive or something, because it is something that's way under considered because people get a gun. They're like, I got a gun now. I don't care. Well, yeah, but life cares.
Yeah.
Life cares.
One thing,
right?
That police training, you know, covers, and if you've had the opportunity to train with some, they do some weapon retention training.
Yeah.
That's not something that you would normally see going into a Muay Thai or a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu place. They're not going to teach you how to, you know, keep your weapon from being taken from you.
No, they teach you how to take a weapon from other people, which is not always a good idea either. Yeah. Once you reach for my weapon, I'm totally justified in using lethal force. That's part of our law here anyway. What are your thoughts on, like, you see a crime going down, and I think this is a – like a dimmer switch variable thing. Like if I see somebody grabbing somebody's purse and running through the parking lot, I'm probably not laying them out like a deer on the first day. Right. Like, right. I think it depends on what's going on, but what are your thoughts on the citizen intervention in that crime that you witness going on?
Well, I heard your concealed carry podcast from earlier this month. So I kind of know where you're coming from. So give me a couple seconds, but
sure. In
general, get out of there as soon as possible. Call the police.
Okay.
Don't need to interact. Now, there's certain examples. You know, the reason why I say that is you often don't have all the information necessary to make a decision.
Agreed.
You're catching a glimpse of something. Now, you have Jack Wilson down in 2019, the Texas church shooting.
Yeah.
He's there. He visibly watches a person pull out a weapon in the church. That's a pretty clear-cut case of where you can use self-defense and kill somebody.
And that guy still killed two people before Jack put him down.
Yeah. Then you have Elijah Dickens out Indiana Mall, right?
Yeah. Well,
he's sitting there in the food court and he hears bang, 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 turns around, sees somebody shooting people and he engages them. That's a pretty clear cut. But let's say that you're up in Buffalo when that guy goes into the grocery store and starts shooting people and you're three aisles back with your kid. You know, are you going to go running up there with a gun and be like, I'm the superhero, or are you going to take care of your family?
I'm going to take care of my kid if I got my kid.
Yeah. And so, I mean,
if I'm alone, that's a totally different answer. If I'm alone or I have somebody I'm looking after, that's
right.
A totally different answer.
I mean, you talked about having a moral obligation and not being a coward. If you are able to affect a positive outcome, you should try to do that. But you also have a moral obligation to your family. I mean, if you're the breadwinner and you do something stupid like interjecting yourself, let's say a domestic, you know, there's a domestic outside, you're at a restaurant, you know, husband and a wife are yelling and screaming at each other, maybe throwing a glass of water or something like that.
Yeah.
You inserting yourself into that situation is asking for trouble. And if you get, you know, shank of a knife that's on the table or he shoots you because he's got a gun and you're not able to take care of your family, that, you know, like I said, it's a dimmer switch of to whether you actually should jump into a situation or not. You know, that's how I kind of view it. It's like, if you don't have all the information, you can certainly get yourself in a lot of trouble. I mean, you see these dirtbag undercover cops, you know, beating up on somebody. You're like, I see that guy beating some other guy. I should go up and shoot him. Well, no, you just shot an undercover officer.
Yes.
He didn't have time to explain that he's undercover and you just jumped into the situation because you didn't know what's going on. See,
we seem to have this mindset that the guy losing the fight, if we didn't see the fight start, is the victim.
Right.
And that's not always the case. You have no idea. Like you said, it could have been an undercover officer. It could be that the guy that's laying the beat down on was attacked by the guy he's like, you know, you don't get to just go up and punch somebody in the face or threaten them and not get a response.
Yep.
And I don't want to be a third party injuring somebody who's actually the good guy in the scenario, or that whatever was going on wasn't enough to warrant taking a life.
Yeah. The other thing that you need to be considerate of is what a lot of people call the Bubba effect. You know, I am in the grocery store. I do hear the shooting. You know what? There's 15 other guys concealed carry running up to the front, all jacked up because they heard gunshots, and now they see you round the corner with a gun.
Yes.
Are they trained to a level where they can discern you are a threat or not a threat? So, like I said, if you can avoid the situation, go outside and make a call. I mean, but if you are there and you see somebody going bang, 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 bang down the aisles, you have a moral obligation to try to stop that person.
I also think that's why being able to draw and reholster is so important. So if I am in a situation, there is a shooting, I do engage the person with the assault. I know I've put them down. I don't want to be standing there with that gun when Bubba runs around with his 357. And let's just be honest, as much as I am pro, you know, concealed carry, pro gun rights, there are people, they're just waiting for their chance, right? And I don't want appear to be Bubba's chance, right? And I think that's, in fact, that's a big part of good carry training is, you know, doing force on force, airsoft work and things like that, and understanding that someone else could think you're the bad guy. And understanding when you draw your weapon, you are taking that risk. The cops can show up and think you're the bad guy. That's why, like, if you do discharge, what I've always said is immediately, unless there's still a threat, holster, hands up and say, somebody call 911. Because bad guys don't say, somebody call 911.
Right.
You know, bad guys say, get on the ground or I'll kill you, or they start shooting people. They don't say, call the cops.
Yeah, we had I was on a church security team for a pretty large church, and one of the rules was, if there is a shooting, you don't go running through the hallway with your gun out.
Yeah.
You don't draw until you're really there and you see the threat.
Because what is the other person that's well-meaning doing? They're scanning for gun. That's what they're looking for. I mean, that's what, and I'm not saying they're wrong. That's what I'm looking for. If I heard shots go off in a place, you know, and again, I don't know what's happened if I haven't directly seen it. For all I know, an undercover detective just shot a perp. I don't know what happened. And I think we have to be very, very careful with our mindset on this.
Well, and then you also run into a training fault that a lot of people have is they don't know how to move with a firearm.
No,
so I've seen that. Their gun's swinging all over the place as they run, or they trip and fall. And of course, you know where your finger is. It's on the trigger. They don't have the training, and then pow.
You know, yeah, they shoot themselves like that in the worse. You know, it's, yeah. What are your thoughts on the kind of gun? I hate asking this because everybody has their own, you know, special little child gun that they love. That is their thing. I'm a big fan of anything that's very, as far as the gear, the functioning and all, 1911 or 1911 like. Like this is a CZ, and it's a 9, but it's very much like handling a 1911. But that's personal to me. What are your thoughts on things?
Well,
like that?
I have two criteria that I say is, first, get something that you will carry. You know, a lot of people are, like you said, a 1911. They say, oh, I should get a 1911. And they realize it's like 2.5 pounds on their hip. And they're like, I don't carry it anymore because it weighs too much.
Yeah. So
get something that you will carry. The second thing is get something that you're comfortable using. You know, a lot of people say you need to get a 38 revolver as your first gun because it's, you know, so simple, right? And then you take, you know, like ladies, you know, they tell ladies all the time, get a 38 revolver. They go to the range and they shoot some defensive loads on there and they don't even get to their first cylinder. And like, my hand hurts. They have no confidence. So what do they do? They don't carry it. Or if they do carry it and they need it, they have no confidence in pulling it out and actually using it. They remember, ooh, that really hurt. So to me, you know, I would rather deal with somebody who has a suboptimal caliber or configuration as long as they have it on them, because perpetrators really break down into three types. You have the first type that is, as soon as you offer them any level of resistance, you know, pulling out a gun, they're going to stop their attack.
Mm-hmm.
That's not going to really matter whether it's a 22 or a 45. As soon as they see the gun or as soon as they see a knife, they're like, you know what? This isn't worth it.
This is not what I signed up for. I thought I had an easy victim. I'm out.
The second group are the people who will continue even though you've already pulled that out, and they will continue aggressing until they get shot. And even if it's a non-lethal shot, just a shot to the leg, a shot to the arm, or maybe even just heard that crack go by the ear, and they're like, whoa, nope, I'm done here. I don't want to have anything to do with it. And really, it doesn't get until you get to the third level of criminal or third category criminal where caliber really plays part. And that's the person who is going to do it till they die, which means you need to have a central nervous system hit, or you need to drop their blood pressure till they don't work anymore, ventilating with pulse. In that case, your calibers that people talk about is a minimum of a 9mm for a 38 caliber. But again, if you're not going to carry a 9 or a 38, it's far better to carry a 22. At least, you know, a lot of cases will get the job done. I'm not a diehard. You have to have this. You have to have that. You know, if you live some people like James Yeager, everybody should have a Glock 19.
Yeah.
There is no other choice besides that.
Yeah.
But you know, there's everybody has their favorites. You got the 1911 crew. You got the 9mm crew. Look, I have more bullets. Look, I have bigger bullets.
Yeah. I'm not so big on caliber at all. After there was a study, it was an informal study. I've covered it before. It's fairly old now, but it covered something like 600 different times somebody shot somebody, whether it was a cop shooting a perp, whether it was a private citizen shooting a bad guy, whether it was a bad guy shooting a good guy. And it broke it down by handgun calibers, and it was what was the percentage of first shot stops? What was the percentage of second shot stops? What were the percentage of lethality? And in that, from 22 to 44 Magnum, you'd think there'd be a big variance. It was single-digit percentiles. And what made the difference when it got to a big jump was rifles and shotguns.
Right.
Rifles and shotguns had this huge number of one-shot stop incapacitation, one-stop anchor kill, and two-shot kill. Right. But handguns were middle of the road, 40-50% across the board. And that's not me advocating carry a 22. I'm just pointing out that if that's what it takes to get you to carry, I'd rather you carry that than a sharp stick.
Yep.
I mean, because numbers are real.
And between a shotgun and a rifle in terms of how much power comes out of those versus a pistol.
You know,
the combat guys are going to tell you a pistol is for getting to your shotgun and rifle.
Yep. But I completely agree. And what I would add to as a civilian, what I add to that as a civilian is if somebody – it's not going to happen here with the perimeter fence, but like when I used to live other places, if somebody knocks on my door at 2 o'clock in the morning, they may very well just be a person needing help. And it's much easier to conceal a handgun in that situation. So that when you realize you don't need it, like you haven't opened the door with how may I help you today? Right. Like, you're in just a better position with that too. I think that if somebody did mean to come through the door and you have a long gun, it's much easier to push that against your chest. This seems off the mark, but real world confrontations are where you learn. So one of the biggest problems that a lot of professional hunters in Africa, especially that go after dangerous game, have is no matter who you are, it's almost impossible as a civilian to own a handgun. So these guys end up like going after a wounded leopard or some shit. And when that cat comes out of the grass and plants across their body, they can't get a shot off. And I think there's some advantages. But yeah, when it comes to terminal capability, it's absolutely not even close. What do you think? The person has a handgun now. Is there anything else they should have? Like, obviously, a good way to carry it would be good.
Well, I take a look at it like this. And, you know, handgun is part of what you call an EDC, an everyday carry.
Yeah.
You know, certain items that you should have on about your body every time you leave the house. And a couple of years ago, I got turned on to this catchphrase called the Fundamental Four by Paul Markle and Student of the Gun. So they developed this thing. It's kind of like, you know, most of the listeners here are familiar with Dave Canterbury and his five C's. You know, he talks about having a knife, you know, having a cutting tool, a combustion, right? So they're not specific items, they're just categories. So in the Fundamental Four, you have something lethal, something sharp, something bright, and something medical. Kind of like a minimum gear list of what you should have on your body as a prepared person going out. Now, if you talk to like the really gung-ho, hardcore, you know, gun guys, they're going to be like, you need to have your pistol. You need to have your spare magazine to your pistol. You need to have your backup pistol to your first pistol. You know,
spare magazine for your backup and then a spare magazine for the spare magazine and then one in your butt. And
it gets to be like, you know, some people like see that approach and they're like, I don't want to carry that much stuff.
Yeah.
Carry what you're comfortable with. I mean, it dictates based on your environment and what your threat level is on what you should carry. Obviously, if you think you're going to get into a gunfight, you probably shouldn't be going there in the first place.
Yeah. If you're gearing up like a TV movie. Like an 80s movie where they raid the back of the Walmart, you know, before they go do the big thing like Chuck Norris or something.
Right.
You're probably not in the right mindset.
So, yeah, I look at the Fundamental Four as a basic. you know, I have a firearm because I'm in a state where I'm allowed to carry a firearm and a person's allowed to carry a firearm. I carry a knife if something sharpie. Sometimes things need to be cut. Carry a flashlight because lights go out in big buildings. It can get real dark in a lot of these places. Or if I need to search for something, it's, you know, it gets to be really handy to have some type of light. And medical, I mean, it's real simple to carry, you know, a tourniquet or a compression bandage. Just stuff it in your pocket. You know, it won't solve every problem, but it solves a lot of problems if you need something like that.
I would agree. I would absolutely agree. I would also add to that, if you are a licensed carry holder, have your license on you. I know that's pretty obvious, but saying you have one is different than demonstrating that you have one. And I have found if I get pulled over by a cop speeding or whatever, and I hand them my driver's license and my concealed carry license, and I said, "Do you have a weapon in the vehicle? Is there anything you need me to do for you?" The response I usually get is an immediate drop down. It's exactly the opposite of what you would expect. Bad guys that want to shoot a cop don't do that, right? They don't do that. And, you know, it's like the answer I usually get is some form of, "Don't show me yours and I won't show you mine." Because I'm like, what do you need me to do?
If you have a hard permit that you've gone someplace, that means you've passed a state background check to say that you're not a criminal. I mean, you can always become a criminal afterwards.
After the fact,
You've at least demonstrated some level of either training or criminal history or the lack of a criminal history.
Yeah.
And the police like to see that.
Yeah. And I don't know what it is in every other state, because the only place I've ever done it is here. But like here, it's pretty it doesn't feel intensive, but it's pretty intensive. Like you have to go down to either a certified person to do it, or you go down to the police station, you get your fingerprints done. That card has to be submitted. It's not something you could easily fake and get a hold of. You have, and then, you know, they have immediate access then to the state database, but with your fingerprints as well, then they have to the federal database. So I think it does kind of just wind a cop down. And as hard as I am on cops at times, I get it, man. Every time you pull somebody over, you have no idea who's in that vehicle. And cops get shot all the time by people that were pulled over because their taillight was out and they had a warrant and they didn't want to go to jail. Like, yep. I get it. I get wanting to go home to your family. I do too. That's one of the reasons I carry.
Yeah, everybody can have a bad day. So even that person who wouldn't normally do something stupid, you catch them on the right set of circumstances, getting pulled over for doing 6 over the speed limit might be that trigger for that person that day.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. That's why I'm like, I always talk about the field, totally unrelated to carry, but I guess it could involve it. None of the road rage bullshit. When somebody pulls some bullshit on the road, I know you want to give them the finger and tell them to fuck off or whatever, but like, just don't, because you don't know the state of that person's mind.
Yep.
That person could have got served for a divorce in the morning, pulled over by a cop in the afternoon, and fired from his job that evening. And now you're the focus of that rage, and it could involve a gun or, you know, anybody in a vehicle's armed. I was going to say that. Like, if you have a 6,000-pound vehicle that can move at 100 miles an hour, you have a weapon. So just don't. I don't know about you. I found when I started carrying, my willingness to be aggressive did not go up. It went down.
Yeah, I was just
the weight of the responsibility.
Most people who go to get carry permits, they understand that there's a higher level of weight on your shoulders and responsibility. You're like, I can't be stupid. I can't do the stupid things. I was just talking like a month ago to a guy who's getting it, or who just got his concealed carry permit in New York State. He goes, "Man, I used to be a hothead. And now I'm like, nope. Walk can't away. You know, let somebody, can't I mean, it's New York." So, you know, the lifestyle and the speak of a New York person in New York is a lot, you know, like, yeah, screw you, you know.
Yeah. Philly's the same way, man. Like, people get in fights over absolute nothing. Like, you come down to Texas, nobody acts like that. I don't know what the cultural thing is, but like, two guys bump into each other. "Hey, man, you got a problem?" Like, no.
Yeah,
yeah, you do. Right. Like, you're like, what is wrong with you? You know? And it isn't a gun thing that people, because like I said, the 90s, you couldn't even carry here. So, and it was already that way. It was very weird. When people first came here, just the cultural difference, like people that visited me from Pennsylvania, New York State, et cetera, we'd go to a grocery store to pick some stuff up on the way home or something. And like, you just have this conversation with somebody in line you know, and then they, you leave the store and they're like, well, how do you know them? And you're like, I don't know that. I don't even know their name. I just, and they can't believe that you just had this open conversation with a total stranger while you waited for groceries.
Right.
But yeah, so like, I do think it does wind that hothead down, because not only do you have a higher responsibility because you're armed, the law sees it. You took the course, you got the permit. Now you have a better understanding of proper use of force. So right. it can actually be used as a prosecution mechanism if you're wrong in the way that you behave.
Yeah, I agree.
You know a little bit about making holsters. What do you feel makes a good holster?
Holsters really come in like three features that you really should have. One is protect the trigger from being activated. So you don't want an accidental discharge. So your holster really should cover that trigger guard, prevent accidental discharge. The second feature that you're really looking for in a holster is when you put it on or wherever you put it, it should stay where it is. Typically, you know, it's cliche-ish, but you'll see a woman, she'll get a firearm, and she'll just throw a pistol into her bag. And then when she needs it, she has to dig around the bag because it's not exactly where she put it. So
yeah.
your second, you know, thing you're looking for in holsters, put it wherever I put that pistol, I want it to be there when I go to grab it. If it's on my hip, I want it to be exactly at that same position. The third thing is really just to protect the firearm. You know, cosmetic scratches, you know, people don't like to see them, but it is to protect, you know, the finish of the firearm. Protect your sights from getting banged around, you know, so that when you go to draw it, it's still, you know, pointed in the right direction. So those are kind of the things that make a good holster. And that can be done with all sorts of things. I mean, I work primarily in Kydex, which is a thermal form plastic. You heat it up, you squish it around it, cut away what you don't need. But you can get holsters that meet those requirements that are both nylon or leather. I mean, there's a lot of different materials that you can use to, but you're looking for something, protect the trigger guard so it doesn't accidentally go off. Keep it where you put it last, you know, whether it's on your belt or in your pack, you know, clipped onto your pack. And then the last one is just kind of protect it overall.
I will say I get a little, because it, no matter what I do, it's never completely comfortable, right? Like women with their purses, if they have a proper concealed carry handbag that has like a specific place for that weapon to be, you know, they can take that thing wherever they go, anytime that they go there, and they're always comfortable. The downside is it's a thing that is separate from your body, and that's yep. the negative, you know, hanging on the back of a chair or something, or, you know, like you then you still have to worry about being able to get access to that. But one of the things that I've had a lot of over the years of doing the show is people that have companies and whatnot. And there was a gentleman many, many years ago who sent me a holster, and he was looking to try to do something together. And he asked me what I carried, and I told him, and he sent me a holster for that. And he was very proud of it. And I put it on my belt, and it did feel pretty good. And then I tried to draw it, and I'm all for retention holsters if that's what you want, but I don't want it retained from me. And this was not a retention holster. I couldn't draw the weapon. It yep. was so poorly designed that when I tried to draw the weapon, it stuck. And I don't mean a little bit. I mean, like, you're pulling you're giving yourself a wedgie.
Right.
And I told him, I said, I can't work with you. And he said, well, if you adjust this and that, I'm like, man, you know, like the way that you can draw, and I've only ever had one do that, but it like stuck in my head that is something people need to be aware of. You need to multiple draw that weapon and make sure you got a good, clean draw. And I'm not talking about trying to be Bob London and shooting balloons at 300 yards with a snubby, right? I'm just saying like that, it has to function well.
Right. You have, when you're dealing with like thermal form, you know, Kydex type holsters, and there's 1,000 people probably in the United States that have holster companies that, you know, do the same thing that I do. But it only takes a few hundredths of an inch molding difference between the mold and the real gun to really throw off the way the gun feels. You know, you like me probably been around and had the leather holsters way back in the day.
Yeah.
Leather holster, your draw angle that you come out of that holster is much wider than Kydex.
Correct.
So Kydex doesn't flex in the same direction, the same ways that leather does. So your draw from like a Kydex holster, it needs to be a lot straighter, a lot more in line with the holster. and you have, you know, you talk about, you know, fighting to jerk that thing out of the holster. It happens all the time. Sometimes it is the way it's molded in. Sometimes it's the direction that you carry it on your belt.
Yeah.
You know, this is a problem that a lot of women have is they're like, oh, I'm going to carry a holster on a belt. And then they wear one of these little spaghetti thin belts and, you know, an inch and a half belt loop on a belt that's like a half inch wide, has a lot of slack on it. And then all of a sudden it's not coming straight up and down out of the holster. So you run into those problems. But you are absolutely right in terms of when you get a new piece of gear, you need to clear your gun, make sure it's empty, put it in and out, work it, and make sure that that is actually drawing the way you want, you know.
Gotcha.
Maybe there are some adjustments that you can do to adjust that. Sometimes there are, sometimes not. Maybe it's I need to move it a little bit further on my belt, you know, inside the waistband. IWB carry is very popular for a lot of people. It's how I carry my pistols. But when I strap the belt on and I pull my belt tight, it puts additional pressure on the holster. So you need to make sure that where you put it on your body, as you put your belt on and you snug it up for the day, can I still comfortably draw it out and make sure that it works for me?
And, you know, you bring a good point up there, too, with if you are wearing clothing that is significantly different from what you normally wear and you put your weapon on before you leave, you want to check that, right? You know, if you wear the same clothes every day, you wear blue jeans and a T-shirt like me, then there's a certain, you know, way that that equipment will carry. And if all of a sudden you're in dress slacks, like you said, instead of this big, huge, thick leather belt I wear, now you're down to some little dress belt or something, it can have that effect, a differential.
It certainly makes a difference.
Yeah. Are there any special considerations for women? We kind of talked about the purse thing, but more and more women are carrying, which I think is great. I've had a lot of women over the years say something like, I don't have to worry, he's got me, and they're talking about their husband. I'm like, well, who's got him? Who's got him, right? Like, you know, you're in a Denny's and 20 people are getting shot and there's more than one shooter. Like, you know, and does he have you when you're leaving work and going out to your car in the back of the parking lot at 7:30 in the winter when it's dark by then? Like,
right.
So I'm glad they're doing it. But in your experience as an equipment manufacturer, have there any specific things that women should think about or that we should think about for the women in our lives?
Some people and tell you women are different than men. I know some people refuse to accept that. The breakdown is really in two areas. One is the physical build. They're usually a smaller stature person and their curves are different than our curves. So where your hips are and where your belt is on your hip compared to where a woman is kind of will change the angle. So you'll find sometimes a woman with a belt holster, you'll carry it at 3 o'clock and all of a sudden it's jamming them in their ribs because that's the way that their hips are angled with their belt. So you kind of run into the physical characteristics. The other one is women don't like dressing like men. They don't like wearing blue jeans. And if they wear blue jeans, they want to wear them skin tight. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden you can't really, you know, as soon as you put a pistol in there, it's printing all over. Printing is when you can see the shape of a firearm underneath your clothing. So they like to wear tighter clothing or lighter fabrics. You know, the lighter this fabric that you're wearing, the more it conforms around the pistol. So it shows that you have a pistol. So guys generally wear heavier weight t-shirts, baggier jeans. So it's a lot easier to conceal that women don't have. But women have a lot of options. Like you mentioned before, the concealed carry purses. There's also backpacks, sling bags, fanny packs. They're all designed to carry a concealed firearm that women kind of gravitate towards because it's just easy. I don't have to worry about my clothing choice changes.
Yeah.
I just grab this bag or I grab this sling pack and I know I pull a zipper and there's my firearm when I need it. One of the things that's really been popular that I've seen with women who want to carry on their body is a thing called, I brought one here today. It's called UltraClip is the company. And what they do is they have a cam clip. Okay. I don't know if you can see that very well.
Yeah.
So that would, what this allows you to do, it's an inside the carry type holster, but this clips onto the top of your belt hem or your pants hem. So you could wear yoga pants clip this on. This has about 90 pounds of retention force on there, so it's going to stay in place even when you go to draw it. So, you know, there are options for women that are, you know, if you want to wear a skirt without a belt, you can still carry an inside the waistband and that type of, you know, there's different types of, you know, options available to people like that. But again, you know, you're talking about the size difference. Women can't carry a full size 1911 typically that a guy can, you know, a double stack pistol, which really runs them into a problem that a lot of women have is they want a smaller gun.
Mm-hmm.
So they get something like a Glock 43X or a Springfield Hellcat. I mean, everybody's kind of making these, you know, short barrel pistols that yeah. have like a full size grip because they want to be able to be comfortable in grabbing that firearms. But what happens is now you have a lot of weight above the belt line mm-hmm. and these guns tend to flop.
Yes. Yes.
You don't have that counterbalance of a muzzle either pushing against your body or just the weight of it, you know,
yeah.
rocking on the belt. So they'll get a gun. They'll get a gun like that, and they'll put, you know, 13 rounds in a magazine and be like, oh, it feels great. It's nice and slim. And then they go to put it on, and it just flops away from the body, which is partly they're not wearing a strong enough belt. You know, the stiffer your belt, the less flop there is.
Yes.
So you can counteract some of this stuff, and then they're like, I don't want to wear a belt like a dude would wear. And I don't blame you. I mean, you want to be a woman. You want to look like a woman. So, you know, their pistol choices that they have tend to be smaller ones, but then you get, like I said, they're more likely to carry a smaller one, but then they go to shoot them. They're like, I don't really like shooting this thing.
Dead on. Well, tell any guy, you got a woman in your life, girlfriend, wife, whatever, and you're thinking about getting her to the point where she's comfortable carrying, as far as what you think she should carry, just shut up. Your opinion is meaningless. I don't care how experienced you are. Take her to a gun range. Most gun ranges will rent various handguns. Pick out various different forms, calibers and forms, revolver, auto, compact, subcompact, whatever. Rent the guns. Let her shoot them. Then she can tell you what she wants. I don't care what you want. I want the person comfortable with the weapon. My wife, just like you said, first time she fired a snub-nosed 38. That wasn't even plus P's. Like, nope, not doing it. Don't like it. And could fire a compact 9. No problem because of the mm-hmm. action of the slide, right?
Yep.
You know, and I don't get it because I shoot a snub 38 and it's, I don't, like, it barely moves my hand. I don't understand. You know, even if I'm not being intentional with recoil control, I don't get how, but it doesn't matter that it doesn't right. bother you, right? Don't ever tell somebody else because something's comfortable for you, it's comfortable for them no matter what it is because you don't know. You're not them.
Right. It goes back to my thing. If it works for you, then it works.
Yes.
You know, my yeah. opinion of what should or shouldn't work, if it's actually working for you, then I need to shut up and just let you do with what works for you.
You want to tell folks a little bit about your company? And I will yeah, sure. bring your website up while you do it.
Okay. Company is called Ares Tactical. It's after the Greek god of war, not the Zodiac symbol, which has an I in it. We're a custom Kydex maker. I cover the whole gamut of stuff from concealed carry to thigh holsters, shoulder holsters. My real niche in my market is that I have a very large selection of weapon lights that's becoming more and more popular as the years go on. People are attaching lights and lasers to your guns. And because I make mine one at a time, I can have, you know, swap things in and out relatively simple versus, you know, going to somebody like Safariland who makes a great holster, but if they're not selling 10 or 50,000 of a holster, they're not going to make that combination for you. So what we do is one at a time, your order comes in, we put the parts and pieces together, we mold it up, and then we ship it on out to you. You know, right now we're running about 3 to 4 week lead time on our holsters. So I've never really gone out and done any type of advertising stuff like that because my pipeline is usually pretty full. I mean, you know, as you're poking around the pages, I mean, I do everything from, you know, like I said, the regular inside the waistband, outside the waistband. If you need to get a hold of me, at the bottom of that page is my text number, my email address. Say, hey, Matt, I got this weird combination or this is what I'm looking at doing. I've had all sorts of weird projects people have come to me for and said, hey, I need to do something like this. And I'll be like, let me think on that and get back to you, you know, work project. But, you know, so I have been very, very blessed in terms of, you know, starting with just a simple inside the waistband holster. And then I was like, well, what's the next problem to solve? What's the next problem to solve? You know, one of the things that we do is, or we're pretty popular with is our Molly holsters. You know, a lot of the tech, you know, it's not a concealed carry thing, but a lot of tactical guys want to run it on their battle belts or on their plate carriers or law enforcement officers. And there's not a lot of guys out there that, you know, work on that platform. So I've been pretty busy with doing stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I will say that to me, the most comfortable way to carry a handgun is a shoulder holster. It just doesn't work well, especially in my climate for concealed. But if I had my choice, that's what I would do all the time. Yeah. I really would. It's just so comfortable, and the cross draw, you know, weak side, cross draw, hand, strong side, like just,
well, I have never been my comfortable. Outside, nobody wants to wear a jacket.
No, but you know, like during the winter, I'll wear a jean jacket a lot, and then it's just fine. I mean, it's just perfect, you know.
But there's a lot of people who have to wear the business suit.
Yeah,
and for them, it works great. I mean, I get a lot of law enforcement, you know, detectives.
Yeah,
order your shoulder holsters up. I see a lot of truckers who sit in their truck all day long, and it's, you know, shoulder holsters have their pluses and minuses. They, you know, they have people tell you that's the worst thing that you could possibly ever do, but it's got some significant advantages too. Like if you're sitting in a vehicle, or even if you're just, you know, at a shop or something like that, and you start to notice something and you're like, that doesn't look right. You know, is it far more suspicious to put your hand on your hip?
Yes.
Or, you know, just kind of slide your hand in on top of that handle there and just kind of wait things out. And
agreed. See what's Agreed 100%. And, you know, your weapon is no use to you if, because it was uncomfortable, you removed it. Like, and I would agree with you. If you have a job where you can carry and you have to wear some sort of a blazer or suit coat, I wouldn't do anything else. I mean, that's what I would do every day that I was in that garb. And it's just from years of doing it and just saying that is just a more comfortable thing.
Yeah.
Personally, and I wouldn't argue with somebody that said not for me, you know, bro. Like you said it earlier, what works for you is what works.
Well, let me say this to the people who are just thinking about concealed carry and they haven't done it before. You mentioned comfort. You know, there's a saying that's out there: carrying a gun should be comforting, not comfortable.
Okay.
To a degree, but really, anything that you start to change about the way you carry or you start to carry, it's going to be different. It's going to feel different. It's not going to feel right. And it'll take you maybe a few days, maybe a few weeks before you start to settle into, hey, now it feels comfortable. Now if I, you know, run out the door and I'm like, wait a second, something doesn't feel right. You're like, oh, I'm missing this piece of gear. Eventually it becomes part of your, you know, part of who you are as you move about. And it becomes less of a problem or less of a distraction to you. So like I said, if you're just starting to get into it, try something out. If the first thing doesn't work, go to the next thing. You know, there is going to be a solution for everybody. Sometimes you just have to try it inside the waistband. Okay, it doesn't fit here. Let me slide it over to this part of my body. Okay, maybe it's the gun and, you know, not the holster, you know, or the type of carry system that you're at. You know, so you got to play with it a little bit. Like I said, it's what works for you. Don't listen to the other guy who says this is the only way to go, because they're not you. They don't have your body type. They don't have your experience. They don't live the same life. I mean, the guy who's, you know, works in the gun shop, stands behind the counter all day, lives a different lifestyle than you, who might be a secretary at an office who sits in a chair all day at the front, you know, answering the phone. So what feels comfortable to him, because he's standing, maybe an appendix carry, is not going to feel the same for somebody sitting down at a desk, you know, jabbing them up.
So real quick here, let's take a few questions and comments. And I only got three, folks. So if you posted one and don't see it, you can repost a question in all caps. We'll make it more likely that we won't miss you there. So anyway, with that said, let's go ahead and start out with Rachel's question. years ago, a gun safety class being given by the chief of Reading Police talked about getting a Arizona carrying permits to cover more states. Is that a thing? And I think that's because of the states that Pennsylvania, at least at the time Rachel's talking about, and their reciprocity agreements.
Yeah, every state has their own other states that they're willing to recognize. So Missouri is recognized in Arkansas, but not necessarily recognized in, I don't know, first, you know, I'll just throw one out, like California. So Missouri usually states, and it's changed over the years since Bruin, but
yeah,
the surrounding states that have a reciprocity agreement. Okay, you're one or two states over, we'll honor yours if you honor ours.
Yeah.
What happened is that some of these states were honored in more areas than others. So, like she said, mentioned Utah and Arizona, they might have a different set of states that they cover in terms of reciprocity. And they allow you to, as a non-resident, get a concealed carry permit. Like Florida was a big one, you know, when I was, you know, in the early 2000s, where the Florida concealed carry permit, you could get that as a non-resident.
Yep.
And it carried in a ton of other states.
That, yeah, I used to have one for that reason.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's absolutely true. Again, you take a look at what areas you're going to, and you can decide if you have, you know, if your state has reciprocity with it. If not, you can look into the other states that have reciprocity and see if they have a concealed carry permit for non-residents.
Residents, yeah. I think it's becoming less of an issue, but like, I think the people that really need to think about that is like, if you always go someplace and they don't recognize you, but they do recognize somebody else, that could be a big indicator that you might want to do that. Mr. Fixie, not really a question, but I think I agree with this, you know, carry your lawyer's 24/7 phone number. I do think it's a good idea for everyone to have a lawyer. Like, it doesn't mean that you're paying them a retainer or anything, but somebody you know and they know you, and in any situation, you're not relying on the police to provide you an attorney.
And that goes back to when you talked about training, and I said, get into a concealed carry firearms class. In most cases, those classes will have a section of the class that's a classroom based that will tell you or what you should look for after an incident. See, that's where people get in trouble. You know, before the incident, during the incident, they're not usually getting in trouble. And then after the incident, they run their mouth. They say the wrong thing. They think they're trying to be helpful and throwing too much stuff out there. You know, some people are going to say, hey, don't say anything. You know, if you're in a shooting, you don't say anything. And you have people like Masad Ayoub, who's a firearms trainer and court expert, said, you know, that's not necessarily what you want to do, because you know what they're going to do? They're going to see you have a gun and a dead person. You're going to get cuffed. And then you're going to wait for a lawyer to come and explain, you know, explain your side.
Yeah.
In terms of getting a lawyer, it's always good to have a lawyer. You know, there's companies out there that say they have concealed carry insurance. They generally, you know, sometimes work, but definitely having a lawyer, like the one that I've most heard other people suggest is called Lawyers on Retainer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have a phone number, and it doesn't matter what it is, criminal or not, they are duty bound to help you out. You know, USCCA in the last couple of years have had a couple of major cases where they told their people who paid for insurance, we're not going to defend you because we think you're a criminal. You know, broken down in terms, you know, that's the simplified version, but
because
they
go ahead.
Oh, the insurance companies have no obligation or duty to represent you for a criminal action. And if you're being charged with homicide because you use it in self-defense, they have that easy out to be like,
we're not defending you from a criminal action.
Would that gentleman recommend that, you know, have a lawyer that, you know, lawyer will represent you no matter what happens. Insurance company represents you sometimes.
Insurance companies represent you when they believe that it is in their best interest to represent you, that it will be more likely than not that they will not have to make a payment by representing you than not representing you. And that's a business decision. I had Masad on years ago. I've run his show as a rewind several times because it's so important. It was on Lethal Force Aftermath. And his view was, when the cops get there, the bad guy is laying on the ground, bleeding to death or already dead, doing a really good job of pretending to be a victim. Right. On the other hand, when you're like, I don't talk to cops, that's not good for you. And his basic advice, and I encourage everybody to at least listen to that episode and consider taking his course, honestly, is you give an account of what happened one time. You sit down and you say, this is what happened and this is why it happened. And then you be quiet. Then you say, and I will be happy to speak to you further after I confer with counsel. And if anything is said other than yes, sir, you say, I'm sorry. Are you denying me counsel? Right. And that way you have been forthcoming. You have explained what occurred. But you've also not given away additional information. If they start wanting to talk about what you had for lunch or some shit, that's not. This is what just happened. And I'm telling you what happened. And now so you've kind of balanced the whole. Yes. It doesn't benefit me to talk to you, but in the situation we're in, I do owe you some level of explanation. And as much as that dude's done, and as many juries as he's talked to, and as many court cases as he's been in, I tend to trust his advice. I don't know how you feel about that, but that's
yeah,
that
you're absolutely right. Advice. That, a thing that happens when people brandish a firearm in a self-defense situation. Is bad guys often like to call the cops and say, you pointed a gun at me.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so if you are in a situation where you pull out a firearm, you should be on the police right away saying, hey, this guy just came at me with a screwdriver, or, he was banging on my windshield, trying to break into my car. You need to get your account out there first. So when a police officer rolls up, if it happens that they decide to roll up, they at least have a frame of reference that maybe you are the innocent victim.
Yeah. This guy just tried to jack me, and I sent him off with a gun pointed at him because, that you'd think that wouldn't happen because that guy didn't want to get caught, but he knows you have a gun, and whatever he pointed at you or threatened you with, he can have gotten rid of by the time they ever actually speak to him. Or he may call that in, anonymously. Yeah. I was minding my own business, and this guy in this car pointed a gun at me. Did you get his license plate number? Yes, sir, I did.
Yeah.
Right. I mean,
they're going to try to be not the victim.
Yeah.
Or they're going to try to be the victim. So like I said, in a carjacking situation, somebody comes up, points a pistol at your window or starts smashing at your window, trying to get in.
Yeah.
They're going to run away and be like, I couldn't get the car, but I'm going to mess with this guy today. I'm going to call it in, say, I was just walking down the street. This guy pointed a gun at me.
Yeah. Yeah. I highly recommend dash cameras for a lot of reasons too. I'll just say that. These last two I'm going to put together because they're kind of the same thing stated differently. Survivalizer says, do you have a less than lethal OC stun gun options? I missed it. You're more a holster guy anyway, but you can give us your thoughts on those. And Rachel says, what's your opinion on pepperball launchers like Brenya? I'll start off with, I think that everybody, at least in your vehicle, should have a really big full-size can of pepper spray. And it has a lot less to do with what we're talking about today and a lot more to do with people getting drug out of their vehicles. Any situations with these protesters on the roads and shit, and people trying to drag protesters off the road. If I'm trying to go somewhere on the highway and I'm trying to get somebody to the hospital and there's one of these environmental protesters or something, they're just getting painted. And I guarantee you they're going to move. They're not going to stay there for very long. And there's other situations that I think that is a beneficial thing. And I'll let you say your thought on this, but the Brenna, or I don't remember how you put it. Yeah, I heard about this on some talk radio station.
Yep.
I looked it up and there were guys that literally bought it and I don't advise this. They shot each other with it. They said, it really hurts. It's really disorienting, but they also were still completely functional. And so what I've never seen is somebody completely functional with their face completely painted with pepper spray. The Brenna thing, I'm not sure about.
Well, I'm not sure what their formula is in there and whether it is based on which state you actually reside in. In some states, you can have certain chemicals in there that you can in other states. Having a less lethal or a non-lethal option is always nice to have, but you don't necessarily, like I said, I'm carrying a pistol, I'm carrying a flashlight, I'm carrying a cell phone, I'm carrying a wallet, and all of a sudden I want to add in, a Brenna pistol or something like, or a can of OC spray.
Yeah.
At some point you're like, I have enough. And again, this goes back to your martial arts training.
Yeah.
Are you, confident enough that you can handle yourself? Maybe that's something that you can leave off because I feel like I can, either verbally de-escalate the situation or I can handle myself at least enough that I'm not having to draw a firearm.
Yeah.
I'm never going to tell somebody don't have an additional option, but if somebody has a knife and they're 10 feet away and you decide to pull out pepper spray, it's not going to go well for you.
No, no, no. But it does have a, I've seen people hit with it, it instantly fucks them up. But I've also seen people hit with it. I've never seen it not work. What I have seen is a fairly significant delay till it becomes incapacitating before the will of the person to keep their eyes open and the body's need to close them collide. And I've seen that take 10 seconds. I've seen it take half a minute. And then yep. If somebody's trained to fight through it, like a lot of law enforcement and military, we train to fight through it, they can tend to last a lot longer with it. But it is another option. And I will also say the people that say shit like it, well, I knew this guy from Special Forces. Are you in Special Forces? No, shut up. But, you know, it usually ends with, he used to put it on his MREs. I'm like, I eat jalapenos on everything. But an hour and a half after I cut the jalapenos, if I forgot I did it and I touched my eye, that's totally different experience right there. So I think it works. But the Brenda stuff, I don't really – I think that's for a person that doesn't want a gun. That's what I think it's for. I don't think
it's valid if you don't feel like you can take somebody's life.
Yeah.
Don't carry a gun. Maybe a burn is a better solution for you. I mean, there's applications where the dog's, you know, in your front yard barking at your dog, and you're like, time for you to leave, dog. You know, you're biting my dog or something. You know.
Yeah.
If you don't want to kill the neighbor's dog.
Yeah. Yeah.
You light them up with a little bit of pepper spray and separate them.
And it can help, but let me tell you something. Dogs have a resistance to this that humans don't. So, and I would have never believed this. Our little Malinois Belle, the one day, she eats everything, and she was in total puppy mode still. And she got a hold of something, and I was about to go in the bedroom to see what it was, and then I heard, and I'm like, what the hell? She had gotten a 3.5 ounce canister of cold steel pepper spray.
Mm-hmm.
And she bit through the metal and she took it full in the mouth. She wasn't happy, but I would have been a puddle of goo on the ground because I've been hit with that shit. Just a little bit of it. Like she was like rubbing her face and all, but if she wanted to eat you, it would not have prevented you being eaten. I'm telling you right now, I'm amazed at how dogs respond to that. I've also seen it kind of make them go away. Like, I had a dog in my face walking down a road one time, and I was armed, and I did have some pepper spray, and I just squirted a little squirt on the ground in front of it, and it was like, you know, I don't want to do this, and it went away. And that's, I'd rather tell my neighbor I shot a little pepper spray at your dog than here's your dog, right? But, yeah, I was shocked. I couldn't believe that. Like, a 3.5 ounce canister, that's a lot. It stained the floor.
Yeah, I mean, and it's right there. There is no separation distance.
Oh, right in the mouth, right? She got it right in the freaking mouth. And, man, I took her outside and hosed her face off and all, but 5 minutes, she didn't even care.
Yeah.
Like, I don't get it. I don't get it. Maybe she's a freak. I don't know, but. Don't think that it's necessarily going to make canines go away. Hey, man, this has been a great discussion. Remember, folks, Matt's site is ArriesTactical.net, and that's A-R-E-S, Aries Tactical, not the astrological sign, but the God of War. And I'll have links to that and his Instagram and whatever else is in here in the show notes on the audio side, which will be live about 30 minutes after we finish. There's a link in the video notes below. And if you click it right now while we're live, you won't go anywhere because we're not done yet. Anyway, Matthew, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you, Jack.
Well, guys, I appreciate Matthew being with us today. This was a great discussion. And I hope that if you have been thinking about concealed carry, that maybe this gives you the little push and the impetus to get whatever training you need and to get the equipment you need and to do whatever you need to do in your state to be able to carry and to start doing so. The more people that carry, the less problems we shall have. I'm telling you, especially with the gun grabbing and things like that, like the number one thing you can do if you want to protect the Second Amendment is convert more people into responsible gun owners. When people own guns and then they hear people talking about seizing guns, it's personal. It's not some arbitrary third-party thing anymore. It becomes real to them. So I suggest be a responsible gun owner and create more responsible gun owners, and look after your neighbors and your friends and your strangers around you, because you would hope if you were under duress, somebody would look after you. With that, let's go ahead and wrap things up. I want to remind you guys that you can help support this show and the work that we do by doing your online shopping starting at tspaz.com. That's T-S-P-A-Z, tspaz.com. Today's item of the day is nothing to do with concealed carry, but it is a great lifestyle item, and it's the same one as yesterday, and they're still on sale for now anyway, the Insta AccuSlim Sous Vide Precision Cooker. I love this thing. It is just awesome. $75 is a stupid cheap price for it. There's a ton of things that you can do with sous vide that makes your life just a little bit better. I've had this particular model now for over a year. No problems, and I don't really take care of it the way I should. It pretty much lives outside in my outdoor kitchen unprotected, and it's lasted a year that way. So it will probably last you many years if you keep it in the kitchen where it actually belongs. And I want to point out, this is on sale. It's a good discount. It's about $25 worth of discount, about 25% off. It will go away. It will not stay on sale because I price watch stuff. And I wanted to throw out a little hopeful impetus for you guys to join the Telegram channel if you haven't done so yet. If nothing else, just for things like this. So last week, I ran the Soundcore Spirit X2 wireless earbuds, which I love because they're the ones that kind of hook on your ear and don't fall into the garden hole when you're digging a hole or into your pond when you're fishing or something. Like, I don't know why Bluetooth earpieces just fall out of my head and end up in bad places. So these are on sale. They were about 50% off the retail, and they were marketed as being renewed. And I immediately, when I ordered them myself, said they were not renewed, that Soundcore was basically doing an inventory dump. Like, we have discontinued this item. We have a new item. We want to get rid of it, but we want to kind of do it to people that wouldn't buy the product that's replacing it anyway, so we don't cannibalize ourselves. Well, if you're watching the video right now, currently unavailable. We do not know when or if this item will be back in stock. I know it won't be. It's gone. It's a discontinued item from Anchor Soundcore, and I have a pretty good nose for sniffing this stuff out. Everything in my product catalog at T-Spaz, I maintain price watches on. And when something like this comes up, I let you guys know about it. In this case, it wouldn't have mattered. You had a good week before they sold out. There are times when I get deals like this and I put them out and I drop them on social media. And by the time I do the show episode and people watch it live and they know about it, and then the email goes out or you get an alert in your podcast app or whatever, and you listen to it the next day, and you're like, oh, shit, that's a good deal. It's gone. There's times I put out these things on T-Spaz at 8 o'clock in the morning, and by the time I go live at noon for the show, it's gone. So if for nothing other than that, consider getting on the Telegram channel. If you get on the channel, not the group, you don't have to listen to a whole bunch of chatter from everybody else in the community if you don't want to do that. You'll get about 3 or 4 alerts a day from me, and that'll be it. So definitely consider doing that. Anyway, guys, it's time to wrap up. Survivalizer says now he's hungry. Yeah, dude, I'm kind of hungry too. It is 1:42 in the afternoon here, and I haven't eaten yet, so I'm going to sign off. Tomorrow we will have an expert counsel Q&A show for the week, and then we will do a Friday flashback, and then next week, once again, we will do it all over again. Thank you for tuning in today, and again, you can just support the show anytime you shop online by starting at tspaz.com or becoming a member of the MSB. Are they going to bail you out or just run you around? They said you should have a house the American way. Dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way. Let me show you a better way.